Warning, the Not Real Art Podcast is intended for creative audiences only. The Not Real Art Podcast celebrates creativity and creative culture worldwide. It contains material that is fresh, fun and inspiring and is not suitable for boring old art snobs. Now, let's get started and enjoy the show. Oh, 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 oh.
Greetings and salutations, my creative brothers and sisters. Welcome to Not Real Art, the podcast where we talk to the world's most creative people. I am your host, faithful, trusty, loyal, tireless, relentless host, Sourdough, coming at you from Crew West Studio in Los Angeles. Man, do we have a fantastic guest for you today on the show, the one and only Samuel Houck, who is the founder of the Hola Mexico Film Festival, 15th annual here in L.A., and it's the largest Mexican film festival outside of Mexico. But we're not here. Samuel's not here to talk about the music festival that he founded. He's actually on the show today to talk about the new streaming service that he has founded online called Thunderflix, which is super cool and fun. And I can't wait to tell you about it. And I'm going to tell you about it in 1 second. But before we do, I want to thank you for tuning in. I want to thank you for showing up. We appreciate you so much. We do all of this for you. So we're grateful for you. Thank you for coming back. Of course, as always, I want to encourage you to check out all the good, healthy, good stuff we got for you there on notrealart.com, our website. It's organic. It's free range. It has no steroids or antibiotics injected into it. It is good, healthy, free range, organic content for you. On our website, you'll discover incredible artists in art, new emerging independent artists, cutting edge artists that will inspire you. So please go discover the incredible artists on our website. Also, check out our First Friday's monthly online art exhibitions. We have many brilliant shows that you can check out. So check out First Friday's. And of course, as always, check out our exclusive remote series. Well, our exclusive series remote with the one and only Badir McCleary, who's taking us on a tour of public art in America. So please check that out. But today we have the one and only Samuel Doak, who, as I said, sort of built his career as the founder of the Hola Mexico Film Festival, the largest film festival outside of Mexico, right here in the City of Angels, Los Angeles, California. However, Samuel's not here to talk about that today. He is here to talk about his new venture, Thunderflix. And I've known Samuel casually for the last several years. I had no idea that he is a diehard fan of heavy metal music. He loves heavy metal. And in fact, he loves it so much that he started this new venture called Thunderflix as a streaming platform so that other heavy metal fans can watch all kinds of incredible documentaries and live concerts and content of their favorite heavy metal fans. And he has curated thousands of movies, documentaries, concert videos right there on Thunderflix for all of us to subscribe and stream and watch at our convenience. It is one of a kind. There is no other platform like this for heavy metal fans. And I'm right now in the middle of a documentary about the Melvins. Fucking love it. It's so great. And so I'm really digging my Thunderflix subscription. So definitely check it out. And that's Thunderflix, Thunderflix. So it's like Netflix, only it's Thunderflix. So Google it, check it out. If you're a heavy metal fan especially, it's just for you. And I think you're going to dig it. But I also think you're going to dig this conversation with Samuel. I just love chatting with him. I always love when artists and art lovers innovate and embrace their entrepreneurial side and launch products and services and experiences that speak to us all, or, you know, mutual lovers of art and music. And so I think you're really going to appreciate this conversation with Samuel. So without further ado, let's get into this and hear from the one and only Samuel Doak. Samuel, welcome to Not Real Art.
Hey, thank you for having me. Man, it is so great to reconnect. I mean, it has been, I was trying to remember how many years it's been since we last talked. I mean, I remember it feels like years ago, maybe 10 years ago, we were talking about a project together, perhaps with our mutual friend Man One and Crew West Gallery. And there was maybe a Day of the Dead kind of connection to it. Skull Show, perhaps, you know, Hedora, maybe the brand. I don't remember. Do you remember any of that?
Of course, now that you're saying it, back to it, we wanted to figure out ways to, you know, bring artists, Latino artists together and do something for Day of the Dead. And of course, Man One, brilliant Mexican or Latino artist that's worked with Hola Mexico Film Festival before. And yes, we connected. I don't think Herradura really wanted to get into those type of things. So I don't think it ended up happening, unfortunately.
Well, you know, that's the life of visionaries like you and me, right? Like, we have these ideas, and sometimes the world just isn't ready for them.
You know? Too early for it.
Well, I am so grateful that you reached back out and we reconnected. I mean, a lot happens over 10 years. And I don't know about you, but I've become a parent and I've had kids and my family's grown. How is your family? What's happening with your clan?
Same, man. I also grew up, maybe.
A little bit.
We have two kids. We have a daughter, and a boy, 9 and 6 years old. So they take, you know, a lot of our time. But yeah, it's definitely a lot has happened in that regard. And, you know, I'm still working from home, you know, with different things. And yeah, family-wise, it's, you know, wife and the two kids. It's,
Well, and, you know, that's in addition to the fact that you have always been an overachiever, always doing so much. Maybe some might say trying to do too much. I know my wife tells me all the time, you're trying to do too much. But you obviously, well, we're going to talk about your new venture, Thunderflix, which I can't wait to get into. But obviously, I think you've sort of built your career, your reputation in recent years, you know, regarding directing and founding the Mexican Film Festival here in Los Angeles. Are you still running that?
Yes. I mean, this is going to be the 16th year, you know, 2024 will be our 16th year of Hola Mexico Film Festival in Los Angeles. And that, you know, it keeps growing. It's been an amazing facet of my life. And I'm very proud to represent Mexican cinema in Los Angeles, the city where Hollywood dreams live and die every day.
Yes. So,
yeah, I mean, Hola Mexico Film Festival has grown to a place where my work is now, I can sort of see it from afar, right? I'm not building up the bits and pieces like I did 10 years ago. Right now, I'm just trying to feed information to the people that need to do things for things to happen.
So yes, yes. Yeah, you have a team, right, that you've built up. You've had to sort of break the trail and lay the foundation. And thankfully, right, it takes to do what you've done at the level and the scale that you've done it. I mean, you know, you are superhuman, but you still can't do it all. You need a team around you.
Yeah, I mean, we have a great team. It's been some people have been with us for more than 10 years, some less. There's like some positions in the team that always change year by year. But in overall, we do have a fantastic team of people who are, you know, also very excited and very supportive of bringing Mexican cinema to the community here in Los Angeles.
Well, I tell you what, I have a confession to make, and I'm embarrassed, but I will confess anyway because we're friends. But I have never been to the festival. I'm ashamed, embarrassed to say. Maybe I can get there this year. When is it?
It's September 20 to the 28th.
Okay. All right.
So, yes. And I'm sure we would love to have you, and I'm sure you'll have a lot of fun there. There's a lot of people who have never been, and some people do that come every year. And that's, I guess, part of the magic of it that, you know, it's an event. So you,
yes,
sometimes things happen and you can't make it. And some, I don't know.
I promise I'm going to do my best to get my gringo ass to the festival this year. I'm long overdue.
Yes.
Long overdue. Well, okay. So people, you heard it here. The film festival's in September. We, you know, go check it out by all means. But, you know, Samuel, you know, you and I have reconnected in recent weeks, really around your new venture, Thunderflix. And I'll tell you what, man, I mean, I'm so charmed and delighted by this because you know, A, I didn't know you had a passion for heavy metal music, number one. Like, that was that was a wonderful surprise. And then, you know, to see you embarking upon curating content directed at what we'll call a subculture of passionate fans, you know, around an art form, you know, creating a streaming platform, which is really what Thunderflix is. It's a, as you said, sort of Netflix-like experience for heavy metal lovers and fans. And there's a lot to talk about, right, in terms of, you know, the challenges that go with, you know, building a streaming platform and monetizing that and promoting that. And we'll get into all of that, you know, but I wanted to start really with your passion for heavy metal music. I mean, how old were you? Who introduced you? I remember vividly when a few of my friends in high school pulled me aside and introduced me to these, you know, cutting edge, crazy heavy metal bands like Pantera, Metallica. This was like 1986, 85, 86, 87. And, you know, changed, you know, I don't know that I became a metalhead per se, but I definitely became a huge fan of the art form and the energy that these artists produce. Take us back to your origin story. I mean, when did you discover heavy metal and how did you fall in love with it?
Oh, man, this takes me back until like from my little childhood. I was, I think, 6 or 7 years old. And I went with my dad to a TV store, like one of those Circuit City stores, but in Mexico, right? And I just saw the cassette tape of Guns N' Roses, and I saw the skulls of Appetite for Destruction in the cross. And I just asked my dad if I could buy it because the skulls called me so much. And he said, sure. I was like 6, 7 years old. And he bought it for me. And I'm like, all right, this is interesting. And I just kept it. I don't remember much listening to it or hearing it, but I just remember the cassette and I had it. And then as I grew older, I remember watching the TV, the music videos of Bon Jovi when Slippery When Wet and New Jersey came out. And I was like, whoa, this is awesome. So much energy and whatnot. And, you know, there's different elements. I remember once I went to a house of a friend of mine and his brother had all these cassettes lined up as artwork of the Iron Maiden. And it was like Seventh Sign of the Seventh Son. He had the Somewhere in Time. And I just saw the skull and I was like, whoa, what is this? This is like the real metal. I'm like trying to listen here to Bon Jovi, but this guy is like on another level. Again, I'm 8 or 9, right? So this is just like little by little getting me into metal. And I guess at some point, you know, I was just like, this is the music I was listening to, Bon Jovi. And at some point, my brother got into Metallica and Guns N' Roses. And I got into that as well when I was like more 10, 11. And I got a guitar and my brother started learning a Guns N' Roses song and I started a Metallica song. And that's when I like, my life became entirely obsessed with Metallica. I couldn't do anything in my life except Metallica. Metallica was my job, my passion, my school, my everything. I bought every album of Metallica. I learned all the songs in my guitar. Just Metallica was my life. And then, okay, I borrowed myself to listen to other stuff. And then when I got to Pantera and I got to a bit of Slayer and I got a bit of Iron Maiden, and it started growing, you know, and then growing up, I always thought, okay, maybe when I'm 18, I'll stop listening to metal, but the opposite happened, of course, because when I'm 16, 17, I discovered European melodic death metal, and that's when I got into In Flames and Dark Tranquillity, and then I listened to power metal from Germany, like Helloween and Gamma Ray and Hammerfall from Sweden, and it's just, it's a universe, right? And the more you go in, the more things you discover. I'm 44 years old and it hasn't stopped. It's still growing and it's just a vast universe where I'm a very happy child there.
Well, you know, because I think I used the word subculture. I mean, the reality is it's a global phenomenon, you know, and yes, it might be subculture in that it's not mainstream culture, but it is a global phenomenon. I don't know what band or what country really gets credit for being the origin or the home of heavy metal in terms of where it was really born. you know, I don't know. I mean, it'd be interesting conversation. I mean, would that be Black Sabbath? Would that be, was it Black Sabbath? Okay, so Black Sabbath sort of, so that's, you know, UK, right? That's London. But then that gave birth, right, to the whole movement. And it's global. It's interesting you said, because you thought maybe you'd be done. But as you started learning and going deeper, you realized it had so many levels globally in different countries and different bands, different genres.
It's insane because, as you say, it's not mainstream, but it's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge. I mean, bands like Iron Maiden, Metallica, and Rammstein, and they go play sell-out stadiums around the world. In Costa Rica, to Brazil, to Germany, to Los Angeles, no problem filling out an 80,000-seat stadium at all. So, you know, it's interesting. Most of the bands come from Europe, but the fans come from everywhere. I mean, South America is like, you know how people say that in Brazil, soccer is religion?
Yes.
So soccer is religion in Brazil. In Latin America, heavy metal is blood. It's like what? It's incredible. Like, you would see smaller bands like Therion or Epica doing tours in Mexico in like 11 cities.
Wow.
Like Zacatecas, Cuernavaca, Chihuahua, you know, they play in front of 2,000 people. But that's, you know, that's pretty crazy.
Yeah, no, that's amazing.
So look, heavy metal is a huge phenomenon, and the people that are passionate about it are more than passionate. I can't find a theme or a subject or an event or something that people are more devoted to than heavy metal and its fandoms.
Well, so this is, you know, probably a good segue a little bit in terms of, you know, seeing a business opportunity, right? Because, you know, as a fan who understood the size of the fan base, the economic power of the fan base, the global scale of the fan base, you know, I'm guessing you're looking at this saying, wait a minute, you know, there's a business opportunity here, or wait a minute, as a fan, I wish there was X, Y, or Z, and you decided to go ahead and take action and execute on one of these sort of opportunities that you saw. And I guess that was sort of the inspiration of Thunderflix, because as I said earlier, you know, you have created the streaming platform, thunderflix.com. I signed up last night, by the way. I was cramming for the test today because I wanted to get in there and really check it out. And, you know, clearly you've invested a lot of money, time, energy, passion into creating a fantastic experience that I hope that your fans are showing up and the business is doing well and thriving, because clearly it's an outstanding product. But I mean, the work that went into it, I'm guessing, you know, between negotiating all the licensing deals and all the stuff that you had to do to sort of aggregate and curate that content, you know, and obviously it's an ongoing battle. But let's go back to the very beginning. I mean, tell me, go back to the day where you got the idea for Thunderflix and how you decided to launch it.
Yeah, and I think you mentioned something very, very important a few seconds ago, where it's like, everyone in the metal industry, I don't think anyone goes there and says, how can I make a business out of this? Everyone's right. Like a fan saying, oh my God, I want to see this as a fan, right?
Yeah.
So with that in mind, as we talked before, I run the Mexican Film Festival. I've done film distribution, film sales, theatrical releases. I'm a film guy professionally, right? But I'm a metal fan in my soul. So when my wife was breastfeeding one of my kids, my youngest one, I was with my iPad and I wanted to watch a concert. And I went to YouTube, of course, and I couldn't find it. I found bits and pieces of it. Some of them were recordings from people. Some of them had a lot of advertising. The sound was terrible. And I'm like, okay, so I need to close this and open Netflix or open HBO. Or I'm like, why can't I press Netflix and all of a sudden it's a heavy metal Netflix? And then that's where the light bulb, yeah, my brain exploded. I'm like, we need to have a heavy metal Netflix. We need Thunderflix. And that was like 5 years ago. So it really took me, because this March 31st, we're turning 1 year. It's going to be our first birthday. But it took me 4 years. Unfortunately, the pandemic, COVID, it came in the middle of it. So I did start it having some meetings with labels and talking, and things were moving to a degree. But then when COVID hit, everything stopped. So that was how it started, right? With an idea for me as a fan to be able to have all my DVDs and Blu-rays and concerts available in my iPad, available everywhere, because I don't want to be, you know, and then like that was one thing. And then I'm thinking, well, I know a lot of my friends don't have a DVD player anymore. They all, you know, they all stream everything. So what happens to the people that have all these DVDs and Blu-rays? Where are they going to watch? The younger kids, they don't buy a Blu-ray player. And I don't like the experience of watching concerts on YouTube because the screen is always full of stuff. Then they cut you in the middle of a song to go to advertising. Then you finish the concert and then they want you to watch a video of something not related to metal. So I wanted to build this experience where it's a whole world of metal. It's all HD. It's all advertising free, and everything needed to be licensed. I wanted to be able to pay back to the bands and the labels. So that was very important for me. That's how it all started, pretty much.
Well, it's one thing to have a great idea, right? It's another thing to actually execute and pull it off. And some industries and some verticals are far more complicated than others. You know, negotiating music rights has got to be one of the most complicated spaces that a person, entrepreneur, can find themselves dealing in, let alone, you know, well, who does own the copyright? Who does own the IP? It might be many people, right? Label, artist, you know, so on and so forth. Let's use the metaphor of, you know, herding cats. I mean, you have to go herd the cats. I mean, my God, you know, how did you do that? Because you must have had hundreds, if not thousands, of conversations around negotiating rights and things. I mean, how did you even go about that? Because that seems like a major headache.
Yeah, well, it still is to a degree. In some cases, it's very easy. So obviously, heavy metal, you know, has a lot of, there's the big three labels, right? There's Sony, Warner, and Universal. But those three are, you know, many of them don't really care about the metal they have there, even though they're the biggest ones. I think they're more concentrated on how to make money out of Taylor Swift.
Yeah.
And some of them do care. Little by little, there's some work being lifted there. But where the heart and soul of the metal community lies is on the independent labels. And I'm talking Metal Blade Records, Napalm Records, Nuclear Blast, AFM, Peaceville Records. So all these new labels, they're not new, they're independent. That's where my bread and butter is. And so I'm speaking with them when I started, right? Some of them had it a bit more easier than others. Sometimes it was like, wait, what? I don't know if we have the rights to these videos. They were released maybe 20 years ago or 30 years ago. I don't know if we have the videos because they were put on a DVD. You know, it didn't exist to have a file 100 gigabytes in a computer 20 years ago. So there was so much discussion into who owns the rights, who has the videos, how can we make this happen? You know, it took a lot of time, a lot of discussion. But again, some labels was easier than other labels. But yeah, I mean, we had to chat between the label manager and then the artist and then the lawyers and then, you know, try to figure out the best way for each label to make it happen, to finally get to the point where we are today.
Yeah, so it was not, I mean, as I understand it, I'm a neophyte, but as I understand it, I mean, these deals, you know, were probably tailor-made cut to fit to each specific situation. It wasn't like you had maybe you could, but it'd be nice, right, if you could have a standard agreement with all of the labels. I mean, but did you have to negotiate sort of tailor-made deals with each of the labels, or were you able to kind of create one agreement that worked for all the different labels?
Look, it is one agreement that I have with all the labels because
Wonderful.
I pay every single content the same way. We don't pay anyone more. We don't pay anyone less. And it's a little bit of a mix of how maybe Spotify and Amazon would pay. It's not like Netflix, right? Netflix would pay you $1 million for your film for 1 year or 10 years, and then they don't tell you how many views you got. They don't say if it's good or bad. They just pay you and they say bye-bye. We give you every month, we give a label a report that states how many videos you have on the platform, how many people are watching it, how many views you get per minute you get paid.
Mm.
So I wanted to do that to be democratic and to be equal and safe and just to have everyone on the same boat.
Well, and that's wonderful to hear. I was hoping that that was the case for you. But I guess I either know too much or know too little. I'm shocked on a certain level that you were able to do that, because it, you know, I know that, you know, these labels and these artists can be tricky sometimes. So the fact that you were able to come up with one agreement that worked for everybody and basically said, this is what it is. And obviously it's a very fair deal for everybody to be able to say yes to it. But it seems to be the only way, right? Because if you're dealing with hundreds of bands and, you know, dozens of labels, you know, you can't have, you know, dozens or hundreds of deals to manage. That's very challenging. So anyway, so you managed to get the deals in place, you get the rights. So that's just getting the deal done, right? Getting the deal papered, as they say. Then you have to sort of aggregate the content. And as you've already talked about, you know, some of these concerts, some of these films, nobody knows where it is. It's like, oh, it's on a DVD somewhere in the back. Okay, what, you know, one of the 1,000 boxes that are in the storage room or whatever. So you've got to start, people have to start finding content, organizing content. You know, how long did that take? And I mean, that's an ongoing process, obviously. But talk a little bit about the challenges of actually aggregating and organizing the content.
Yeah. So again, it depends on the label. Some mm-hmm. labels actually sent us a box of Blu-rays and DVDs and say, you do it.
Go for it.
And, you know, thankfully, the way things are with technology now, it's very easy to digitize a physical product and sometimes even make it look better mm-hmm. with a bit of up-res and make it, you know, some things didn't look so good back in the 80s, but now with technology, you can make it look nicer. Mm-hmm. So we're able to do that, which is amazing. Some things were actually compressed too much on a DVD and they found the original file and they sent it to us and looks much better. So, you know, we're good with that. Some labels are able to send me directly the file and I download and it goes straight to Thunderflix. So there's a lot of different ways in which we're working.
Sure. And you say we, again, kind of a reference to the team. I mean, how many folks are on the staff now for Thunderflix to help you pull this off?
So we are pretty much three of us. I'm the only full-time, of course. I have a guy doing marketing. He's in London. He's the head of marketing. And, you know, it's part-time, but he's doing all of the marketing. And we have a part-time video editor and graphic designer that does all our, because of course, we need to promote all of our content on social media, on YouTube, everywhere. So we have a video editor doing those things. Yeah, and then we've hired different people, different agencies for different things.
Yeah, well, that's great. So, okay, so we can get back to sort of operations and team building in a minute. But so you get all the content aggregated. And I understand that, you know, I'm guessing a lot of these things are happening on parallel paths. But so you get all the content. Well, okay, great. Now you've got to build a platform to serve up, if you will, the content and stream the content on demand to your fan base, to your audience. And I'm guessing, I mean, you know, I'm guessing you licensed the technology to stream, or did you build it yourself? I mean, how does one start a streaming platform?
Right. So for this instance, we licensed the technology, mm-hmm. which ends up, you know, easier. It is a bit cheaper to a degree. And as a startup, I guess that's the only way, unless you have millions of dollars and you just want to put them and see what happens. Because to build this technology would cost you a lot of money from
millions, yeah,
the ground zero. So we're licensing, which is very good. And that gives us a lot of freedom for us to, as you said, focus more on the licensing and the marketing of the whole product of whole Thunderflix, as opposed to concentrating solely on the technology.
Right, right, right. Yes. And that's the thing, right? I mean, there's a lot of these off-the-shelf kinds of solutions that work wonderfully and are hugely affordable, right, for small companies and or startups. And so you license the technology, you start, you know, I guess, populating the platform with the content. I mean, how long does it take to populate a platform with, you know, 100 terabytes of data? I mean, you know.
Yeah, wow. I think it took us like a few weeks from zero to where we launched, or maybe a month. Because, of course, you know, every video goes up, but then you need to edit it. You need to add the images, the words. You need to make sure it looks good. You need to categorize it. There's a lot of programming behind that. So we launched with, I think, 130 videos.
Mm-hmm.
Now we have like 900.
Oof.
So, and there's so much coming. There's so much coming, which is great because that was one of our fears at the beginning to say, oh, well, how much content is there on heavy metal? I'm like, you don't even know. There's so much. And every year there's new content coming out. So there's films that people have seen on TV and on movie theaters and film festivals. And at the same time, there's bands creating concerts and documentaries and everything in between. So we've been able to have this strategy where every Friday is release date. So every Friday, we've managed to go from 2 to 4 titles. And some weeks, we've done like 20. Like when we have a new label, here you go. And then sometimes it's like 5 or 3 or 4, sometimes 2. But every Friday, there's been new content.
Oh, that's wonderful. Right. So people know Fresh Fridays. Show up Fresh Fridays. There's fresh goods being served up.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Okay, so you launch with X. You now have well over 900 films and videos and stories that people, you know, can consume. Just because we build it as entrepreneurs, right, it doesn't mean they come. I mean, you can build an incredible product, but if no one knows about it or if no one shows up, you've got a major problem, right? So that's a marketing promotion challenge. And so much of marketing these days is a matter of investment in terms of cost. I mean, more money, more marketing, more people maybe. But as a young, you know, startup company, I'm guessing you didn't have a ton of money for marketing and promotion. So how do you go about rolling this out and promoting it to your fan base, especially in an environment where people are feeling overwhelmed by the number of choices out there to get their content, the number of streamers? You know, I don't know about you, but I feel like I'm paying, you know, I've got so many subscriptions now. I don't even know, you know, how many sometimes. So there's some challenges for you, right? Now, I guess the good news is, right, you're serving a passionate market with a product that they don't have. So your story is really unique and compelling. So take us back and talk us through how you've rolled this out and promoted this to your audience.
Sure. So when we just launched, we hired a PR agency to do a product release, so to speak. And that, of course, helped that because, you know, the heavy metal lives in a contained space, right? So there's the heavy metal blogs and the heavy metal websites and the heavy metal magazines. So we bought a few advertising pages in some magazines. We did a few campaigns with different websites. We had, as I said, a PR release. And, you know, we've got some bands to help us with marketing, and that's huge.
Because yeah, right.
The bands have millions of followers, so...
Mm.
If a band tells them, oh, go watch your video in Thunderflix, as opposed to me spending the money on social media, that definitely helps a lot. That has been a lot of help in a few bands in particular, like Opeth and Epica come to mind. But yeah, I mean, we spend money on social media. We are trying to, you know, do marketing as much as possible. We have a newsletter going every Friday. And the social media and the pushes on our notifications. Yeah, I mean, getting into people's fans, some people react amazingly and they're, you know, sign up for a whole year and they're very happy. Some people say, well, you know, I can see some of these things on YouTube and it's free, so why pay? You know, which, okay, if that's their experience they want to do and they want to watch the advertising, and I'm happy, you know, for that as well. So we have a lot of work still to do. There's a lot of things that we still need to upload, and we're building, we're updating. Our app looks a bit different now than it looked back then. We have a lot of different features that we didn't have from when we started. And I guess the more content we have as well, the more people are going to hear about us because, you know, for example, there's a new label coming and that brings all these new bands and that means new fans that get to hear about us. So it's a constant work in bringing new people and bringing new content. And in the not too distant future, we want to have our own content. We want to be able to produce our own films and produce our own concerts and produce. There's a lot of stuff we need to do. We have on our plans. And I think when that happens, it's going to take off to a point of no return where this thing is really going to explode. So that keeps me in a good place.
Absolutely. It's so exciting. I'm just so happy for you. I really am. I just love, as a fellow entrepreneur as somebody who loves art and loves artists, no matter what, and certainly as a kid that grew up in the Midwest of America, you know, with Ozzy and Metallica and Van Halen and, you know, on and on. I mean, I'm just so delighted for you and for our fellow fans that Thunderflix exists to conveniently consume a content that they love. You know, and there is a convenience message here, right? Like, it is hugely convenient to have a curated brand, a brand of curated content that's a destination for people to go and get the stuff that they love. Are you happy with your growth? Are you meeting your goals in terms of growth in subs?
Yeah. We had a goal for the first year and we doubled it.
Nice.
So I'm very happy with that. I want to double that amount by the end of next year. So if that happens, then, you know, I'll continue to be super happy. So we're bootstrapping here. There's like money coming in, but the money comes out immediately. So
yes, of course.
We need to pay all our content providers.
Yep. Right? Yep.
To pay the technology, we need to pay the advertising, but then there's little left after that. So it's not an easy battle. There's a lot of stuff to do, but the growth is there. Sometimes I see the growth every day, which is amazing. New subscriber. But then some people leave. But then there's like 10 people joining in one day. But then there's 8 people leaving. And then it's like,
right.
To see that, the only one gets to see the graph of like the on and off. If you see it from afar, it's all up, right?
But right. Don't zoom in.
There you go. You see, like in 2 weeks, it's like, what's going on here? And I'm like, all right, but little by little. So.
It's like the weather in Chicago. I'm from Chicago originally. And the joke is, you know, wait 10 minutes, the weather will change. You know, it's like the wind, you know, it just changes and that's it. We're living in this world. And certainly if you're in the subscription business, you know, online, people sign up to get to the premiere and see something and then they unsubscribe as soon as they see it. And, you know, and they're juggling these subscriptions, you know, but you have a very unique advantage, I think. And that is the fact that you are very focused on the kind of content that you are curating and serving up to your audience. I mean, the problem with Netflix and, you know, Saturday Night Live even did a skit about this years ago. It's like the endless scroll, you know, you go to Netflix and I love Netflix. I'm not bashing, but the content, it's just, there's so much variety of content that it's very hard to get to what you want to watch, you know, sometimes, and to find something because there's just so much. And to have a curated destination or a brand, and, you know, it's like, you know, if you're a sports fan, you have ESPN, right? If you're a news junkie, you have CNN, perhaps. You know, if you're an entrepreneur or a business person, you have CNBC or something like that. And, you know, now metalheads have Thunderflix.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that and to be a fan that managed to do something for the industry. I'm very excited about that. And yeah, there's definitely something there. And the reaction has been amazing. And I'm very happy with how it's going. So I can only wait and see where it's going to grow. Hopefully it is what I have in my mind. We have a few films in the pipeline that are in pre-production and I want to make them happen. And if that's the case, I'll be very, very happy too.
Do you see, you know, putting our rose-colored glasses on and dreaming big for the future, planning for success, do you think that Thunderflix, you know, will eventually also become a music label itself and break bands and that kind of thing?
You know, I don't think about producing our own bands, maybe. What I do think is doing our own films.
Right.
Sure. We want to do our own films. We want to do maybe even concerts or festivals, or, you know, we definitely want to stream festivals. We already spoke with one for this summer. We're still working on that. We'll find out. We want to do like variety TV shows. There's a lot of stuff we can do and we want to do. I don't know about a label and release music ourselves, but definitely, our own content is something in the not too distant future.
Well, part of the value proposition as I see it, you know, I think you're spot on because, you know, there's enough labels out there. What's missing is promotion and amplification, if you will, for artists. Like the fact that Thunderflix can help metal artists promote their work, you know, amplify their work, market their work, you know, and connect you know, bands with fans and fans with bands, that's a critical link in the value chain that, you know, labels are in the business of making music and records and promoting those records. But what Thunderflix is doing from a live action perspective, call it that, you know, I mean, it's just no one else is doing it. I mean, you guys are the only player in the space right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And thank you. It's true. I mean, if you go to YouTube and you want to get to know a metal band, it's impossible. What are you going to search? Heavy metal bands?
Yeah, right.
What are you going to get from that search? And if you watch a band that you like, the next thing it's going to be another band. Like they're not going to give you a similar band.
Yes.
You're going to have to go to a label channel, which is great. And then you're going to check the videos there. But there's, you know, at the end of that video, it's going to take you out of there. And then it's going to give you just those labels. Whereas on Thunderflix, a lot of people have told me I've discovered so many amazing bands. And even I discovered many bands because if I approached a label like AFM Records in Germany and I said, okay, I know you guys from this and this and this band. And they said, oh yeah, but we also have those ones. I'm like, okay, let me see. And I'm like, wow, this is awesome. So I get to learn so many new bands from this. And a lot of our audience is also learning because they're, you know, they're already there. They're next to each other. So it's not like you need to really search for their name because you don't know their name. Right?
Right. Right. There. Yeah, yeah. Well, you kind of have a dream job, my friend. You have created a life for yourself where you get to work with your favorite artists, your favorite art forms, whether it's in cinema or film or heavy metal music. You have seemingly, from an outsider looking in, managed to pursue your passions and have a fulfilling life as a result of that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm very, very lucky. You know, my father always said, look, you need to do a degree. And then if you want to sell apples on a stand on the street, do that. Do whatever you want to do in life, but have a degree.
Yes.
And I was always very, I considered myself a creative person. And I never wanted to, you know, I always believed that saying that if you love what you do, you don't have to work. Right. But then it's work. It's work. It's not like it's not. Sometimes it's like nighttime and I'd rather be with my kids, putting them to bed or something. And then there's a film that needs to upload. There's a film that needs to do this. So it is work. I love the band and I love what I'm doing. But at the same time, you know, work is work. And yes, I'm very lucky. I'm very happy and I'm super passionate about this. And nothing in my life gives me more pleasure than heavy metal. So I'm a metalhead and I'm very happy that I'm able to do this and that Thunderflix is now going to turn 1 year old. So,
well, and I mean, yes, I mean, there's always work. You're right. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, you know, nobody likes paying bills or doing their taxes or uploading yet another terabyte of data, you know, to the cloud or whatever. But that's the price we pay, right? To actually then go and meet that band and do a deal and make fans happy. You know, we're very fortunate, right? That we, you know, yes, we work hard. It's stressful. It can be very stressful, but it's also incredibly rewarding because we get up every day passionate about, you know, what we're doing to help artists.
That's true. That is true.
And, you know, it's funny because, I mean, you were a fan or are a fan and came at it, you know, from a fan's perspective. And I love that, you know, and I guess the same is true for us. You know, in terms of the visual art and visual culture and the creative arts and, you know, sort of like we just, you know, learned a long time ago, we're just passionate and we love helping artists tell their stories and promote their work. And that's why we started the podcast, you know, because, you know, we felt like artists need more opportunities to tell their stories. Artists need more opportunities to amplify their work. And so, you know, if we can, you know, do a few things to help artists tell their stories and promote their work, then, you know, then we've done a good thing. And doesn't mean it's not stressful and hard work sometimes. It is, but it feels good at the end of the day.
Thank you for doing that because we, you know, the industry needs people like you to, and, you know, like us, it's like a biome where everything works in conjunction to give us little fruits. So
Exactly. So what are your goals? As you look, well, we're in a new year now, well into the new year. You know, when you think over the next 1, 2, and 3 years for Thunderflix, what are your goals, the main goals for Thunderflix, you know, this year and in 2025 and moving forward?
So our main goals is to, activate and finalize with most of the labels.
Mm-hmm.
We still have a few labels that are missing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think by the end of 2024, I should have all the labels, because we're already in deep conversations with many that are still not there. But I think once we have all the labels, that's a very good thing for us. And then, you know, we need to reach to an X amount of subscribers to be able to do our own. I want to do, there's a specific exclusive or own thing we need to do. And I hope we can do that before the end of 2024. Then in 2025, there's a few movies we want to do. So hopefully we'll get to that amount of subscribers or financiers interested in producing films with us in order to produce these two films that we want to do.
Well, that's fantastic. I have a kind of a question, you know, that's just coming to mind. I would have, you know, it would have been better to ask it 45 minutes ago. But, you know, when it comes to heavy metal, how many subgenres of heavy metal would you say there are?
Oh, my God. This is a question no metalhead wants to answer. Because every day there's a new one, right? And like last time I heard, metalcore was a genre.
Mm-hmm.
Now I know metalcore has like 20 different subgenres.
Oh, wow.
And the new bands that are coming out, you know, I'm trying to categorize my records. I'm a huge record collector. And I just didn't know where to put this band because it sounds like black metal, but now it's called, maybe it's now post-black metal, symphonic metal, but it's now a bit more of the progressive side in the symphonic metal. So it's a progressive symphonic, or is it symphonic black metal? You know, it began, right, with heavy metal. Then you got thrash metal, new wave of British heavy metal. Then you have speed metal, but now people don't use speed metal. It's more like, okay, thrash. Then there's power metal, but then there's now folk metal, but then there's fantastic folk metal or fantastic power metal, fantasy power metal. It never ends. There's so much, and they're very different. They're very different. As a fan, some things I love and I'm like, just give me more. And some things I'm just stay far. I can't. Some things,
not for you.
It's crazy. Some parts of it, I dislike them as much as I dislike like country music or something like that. You know, I can't.
Right.
But it's just, there's a lot. There's epic metal. And, you know, we're trying to, as categories on Thunderflix, you can see we have power metal, progressive metal, black metal, death metal, but only in death metal. It's now melodic death metal, classic death metal, Gothenburg style death metal. There's American death metal. There's just so much, so much. And I guess, you know, for fans, it gives us something to talk about and to negotiate or to just like discuss. Like, oh yeah, this band, oh, are you sure it's death metal? No, I think it's more like thrashy death metal. And there's just so much conversation to be had. And that gives life to metal to a degree. But then it's just, there's an evolution that doesn't stop. But then some people complain that there's no evolution in metal and it's been the same. And I think that's rubbish because there's so many new bands. Like, I don't know if you heard of Sleep Token.
I don't believe I have.
So I think that's the last band that came out to become huge, like out of thin air. They're a huge, huge, huge band now, and they play a style of music that it's very hard to categorize. I don't know if it's like gays, techie, deathcore. I don't even know how to start talking about this band, but it's amazing. And the singer is like soul, very deep, like music, like soul music. And the drums is insane, super quick and fast and melodic, and it's progressive. And the guitars are, you know, very, like new metal, but it's definitely not that. So it's just new bands doing new things all the time.
And that's life, isn't it? That energy, you know, is life affirming, right? And that innovation, that creativity, you know, being able to take an art form and evolve it and push it forward and change it. And, you know, mostly for good, you know, some for bad and some, you know, I guess net neutral or whatever, but that's just the beauty of art and artists. And, you know, it's like, where can it go? Right. I mean, where, you know, it feels like it will never stop.
Right. And that's great. I mean, even some people change it. And as you say, not for good or for good. Look, if there's a fan out there that likes it, then it's good. And if you don't want to call it metal because you don't think it's metal, that's on you. But, you know, it is what it is. It's a band. they're doing something, they have fans, let it run with it.
Indeed, indeed. Well, you're the new version of MTV, right? I'm a lot older than you, and I was one of those American kids back in the 80s running home after school and calling my cable company and saying, I want my MTV, because it was starting in New York and they were trying to grow it. And back in those days, it was music. It was music videos, and that's what it was. And eventually it became, you know, something else. And the music kind of went away. But Thunderflix is MTV for metalheads in the 21st century.
I'll take that compliment. Thank you.
That's great. Well, Sam, I don't know if you go by Sam. Samuel, Sam, I'm so grateful that you took time out of your busy schedule to come and tell your story and share your story. I hope all the listeners here check you out, Thunderflix, whether you're a metalhead or not, check it out, because this is a labor of love, you know, from one art lover to another, you know, dedicated to heavy metal music. And, you know, and it's a great story just in terms of, you know, not just the art and the artist, but as an entrepreneur, as anybody out there who has a dream, has a vision for doing something different, doing something new, doing something innovative. You know, I think there's a lot to learn from your story, Samuel, and in your journey. It's not easy. It is sometimes very hard work, stressful work, but man, oh man, can it be rewarding. And, you know, I'm just so grateful that you came on and took time out to tell your story here.
That's good. Thank you. I appreciate it. I really appreciate all the compliments, and it's a pleasure talking with you.
Well, it's exciting, and please come back. Okay, you're always welcome. Anytime. And well, you know, maybe the next, you know, when you start producing your own content, that's another milestone moment that, you know, come back on and talk about that.
I like it. We'll bring the director and actors and who not to talk.
I love it. I love it. All right, people, check it out. Thunderflix.com. Thunderflix.com. Thanks, Sam.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Not Real Art Podcast. Please make sure to like this episode, write a review, and share with your friends on social. Also, remember to subscribe so you get all of our new episodes. Not Real Art is produced by Crew West Studios in Los Angeles. Our theme music was created by Ricky Peugeot and Desi DeLauro from the band Parlor Social. Not Real Art is created by We Edit Podcasts and hosted by Captivate. Thanks again for listening to Not Real Art. We'll be back soon with another inspiring episode celebrating creative culture and the artists who make it.